So my name is Maureen O'Hagan. I am with MCO Housing Services, and with full disclosure, my brother is building the cottages, MCO cottage rentals in Lancaster. But with MCO Housing Services, we specialize in affordable housing. So I've been doing affordable units for 20 years or so. So even though he is my brother. Anyways, so tonight we're talking about MCO College Rent Cottage. I keep saying college. Cottage rentals in Lancaster. It's adjacent to 259 Deerstorm Road in Lancaster, and it's a new rental community of 32 rental standalone cottages, which has 31 new cottages and one existing home that will be renovated and rented as well. There are a total of eight affordable rental homes, five two-bedroom and three-bedroom units. The two-bedroom units are 1,296 square feet. The three bedrooms are about 1,500 square feet, and they provide 1.5 to 2.5 baths, all kitchen appliances, and it provides laundry hookups. You will need to provide your own washer and dryer. It is a non-smoking community. Pets are allowed with a monthly pet rent. There will be, I'm certain, breed restrictions, which every rental and homeownership community has because of, the pit bulls and all the other big dogs that insurance companies do not like. So the rent for a two-bedroom home is $2,104, and for a three-bedroom home is $2,422. Tenants are responsible for water and internet and cable only. All other utilities are included in with the rent.
Could
The
you repeat the could you repeat the rental costs on the three bedrooms again, please?
three-bedroom rent is $2,422.
Okay, thank you.
Right? Yep. The homes are all electric, including the heat. So electricity and sewer is an on-site septic system. Those fees are included in the rent. All the units will be distributed by lottery. Tonight is the public information meeting. So tonight you can ask any question you have. We're going to spend the bulk of it going over the documents you need to submit with your application in order to submit a complete application. And then we're also going to talk about how the lottery works. But most of the time, based on past experience, we will be talking about the documents that have to be provided. The application deadline is April 16th. So your application needs to be in our office on or before April 16th. If you are mailing your packet, you want to make sure that you walk it into the post office and have them date stamp it if you're mailing it 2 weeks or so before the deadline, because mail is not going from point A to point B in a timely fashion. So as long as it's postmarked on or before the deadline, we will accept it even if it arrives after April 16th. And then the lottery right now is scheduled for May 17th, also via Zoom. And we will move that up if we can, but we allow ourselves plenty of time to review applications if needed. Now, the rent is not income based. You are responsible for the rent as stated. Section 8 or other housing vouchers will be accepted, but if you do not have a voucher, generally the minimum income for the two-bedroom unit is $63,120. And the minimum income for the three-bedroom unit is $72,660. That's the minimum you need to earn in order to qualify for the project. Now, if you don't earn $72,660, we may be able to take assets under consideration as well in determining that minimum income. So we will make that determination as we review people's applications. Now, all applications need to be complete, which means you need to complete the application and provide all the required financial documentation with the application on or before the application deadline. If you do not, or your application is, when we review it, is considered incomplete, you will not be included in a lottery, but you will be notified via email or letter of the documents that were missing, and you will have the opportunity to submit the missing documentation. But you will not be included in the lottery. We will add you to the waiting list, and should units remain after the lottery, we will fill it from the waiting list. Okay? And I will tell you, we are very strict with that. So you can mail your application. You can email it. We will be setting up, it's not available today, should be available by the end of the week, setting up an encrypted email if you want to submit your information encrypted. That will be available, just not today. And then you can email it, fax it, mail it. We don't recommend you fax it. Sometimes you don't get all the pages. If you have Staples fax it, sometimes they don't send all the pages. So that would be on you, not on us. Okay, so your best bet is to either email it or mail it. So if you are on this meeting will be posted on our website if you want to listen to it again. It'll be posted tomorrow or Wednesday by our computer guy. So that will be posted to review it. If you the lottery will take place via Zoom as well. And if you can't make that, we do send out the lottery results as they withdraw, which I'll get into more detail as I get to that section. So there are three main eligibility criteria to lease an affordable rental property. One is based on income. It's based on all income for everyone in the household 18 years of age or older. It's gross income from all sources before any deduction of taxes or whatever else may be deducted from your income. So if you are a one-person household, the maximum allowable income you can earn is $66,300. For a two-person household, $75,750. For a three-person household, $85,200. Four-person, $94,650. Five-person, $102,250. And a six-person household, $109,800. That is the maximum you can earn. Obviously, you can earn less. And it's from all household members 18 years of age and older and all gross income. Assets, we do not count. There is not an asset limit in affordable rental housing. There is for home ownership, but not for rental housing. So the way we look at your assets, if your assets total $5,000 or less, we count the actual interest and dividends earned on that on those assets. And that those interest and dividends are added to your income in determining final income eligibility. If your assets are $5,000 or more, we're going to look at the greater of the actual interest and dividends earned, or we're going to multiply the full value of your assets times 0.06%. So whichever is
that's only if you're sorry, that's only if you're buying but not renting.
No, this is for renting. If you are purchasing, there is an asset limit. But for renting, we do take a percentage or, you know, the interest and dividends and add that to your income. So if you have $5,000 or more dollars in assets, we're going to take the grade of the actual interest and dividends earned or the 0.06%, which is like 6 cents on a dollar or something. We're going to multiply by 0.0006. So it's very little money. Whichever is greater is added to the income for eligibility.
Does that count IRAs that aren't being accessed yet?
Well, that depends if you can access those accounts. So
not without penalties.
Yeah, not without penalties.
I don't want to incur penalties.
Well, I understand. So, what happens is with those accounts, if you have access to them, we would deduct the penalties and taxes you would need to pay. So that whatever that total is would not be counted as part of your asset. That makes
right.
sense?
So my IRAs, I haven't got access to them until I'm 63, I think.
IRAs is 57 and a half.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, for IRAs. I can't speak for your 401k. I think that's higher. But for an IRA, it's 57 and a half. So we would count
I'm
the
not
IRA.
Touching it.
I'm sorry?
But
I'm not touching it.
Well, no, and we're not saying
but
you
we have to
touch
it.
You do have to provide the document.
But we have to provide you.
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll look at the total value, and we will deduct this penalty if you're not 57 and a half, and we will deduct state and federal taxes you would need to pay on that money. So whatever the balance is would be added to your would be counted as the asset limit. Okay.
So if I don't touch it, it doesn't enter into your calculations.
No, it does because you can have access.
You
it does
count in the calculations. You will have access. You will pay taxes and penalties, but we'll deduct the taxes and penalties. So say you have 100,000, I don't know what you have. You're paying maybe 37% in taxes and penalties. So we would deduct the 37,000 from the 100,000, and the balance at that 63,000 is what would be counted for your asset on that $100,000 account.
And then you times that by 0.0006,
right. That includes your checking account, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CDs, 401ks. It includes all of your assets. We will multiply the total by 0.06%.
0.06. All right.
Yeah.
And that can't exceed cannot exceed $5,000.
No, it does. That's not anything above 5,000.
You're not listening. So if your assets are $5,000 or less, okay, so you
have
$4,999 in assets, we are only going to count the actual interest and dividends earned. If your assets are over $5,000, okay, that's when we'll take the greater of the actual interest and dividends earned, or if the 0.06% is greater, we will use that amount. But that's only if you have $5,000 or more in assets.
Okay.
And I've never, in all the years I've done this, I have never had anybody go over income by adding the interest and dividends to their accounts. Not yet, anyways.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you understand that?
Yeah, if I can repeat it back, if you have assets over $5,000, you'll either look at the interest and dividends earned or all your assets times 0.06% if it's greater than your interest and dividends earned.
Correct. And that will be added to your income.
Okay. And we weren't listening. We just weren't understanding.
That's okay. I'll be here to answer and make sure you understand everything before this meeting is over. So ask away. I really love it when people ask a lot of questions. It's much more enjoyable for me than talking.
Good.
Okay, so you need to be determined program eligible by us. And then if we determine your program eligible and your name comes and you have the opportunity to lease based on the lottery, you need to pass the leasing office screening as well. And they will do, now Mandy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, credit check, pass landlord check, and a Corey check, criminal check.
A what check?
A criminal check. Background.
Corey check is criminal background.
Oh, so it's a bit dodgy that I've been a member of the mafia for 38 years.
Yeah, well, that could be a problem.
So it depends what kind of mafia you're in.
might
see that as a sign of protection for the neighborhood. I don't know. It depends on your view of the mafia.
I didn't think of that. You're absolutely correct.
Security firm.
that's not a bad thing. That screening will happen after the lottery. So if you have the
It's a credit check, landlord check, and a criminal check.
Correct. Yep. And that is done after the lottery.
Well, I know I'm okay. I'm just a bit concerned about her.
She looks like a criminal. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Okay. So you may not own a home and rent an affordable apartment. So do you own a home?
No. Well, at the moment we do.
We do at the moment, but it's going up for sale. We're hoping the end of next week.
Oh, perfect.
We are actually in Indiana. As you can probably tell from my voice, I was born and bred in Massachusetts.
I think we spoke on the phone.
Yes, we did. Yes. And we're coming back to Massachusetts and we're relocating, and he's no longer employed, which is what makes us eligible for this, because I'm self-employed and I fall in between the for a family of four, that 62 and 96.
Okay, that's right. I remember our conversation. Okay.
Yeah. So we're letting our kids finish up their last year. Well, my daughter's sophomore and my son's junior year. And
we want them to finish up in Massachusetts.
We want them to finish their education off in Massachusetts. I mean, it's been interesting down here. I'll leave it at that. I'll just
that
say
was a very nice way to put it.
You can take the girl out of New England, but you cannot take the New England out of the girl. And as you can tell from him, he's from England. So
I'm from old England.
Yeah, old England. So he liked living in New England because it reminded him of England.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
And some of the aspects. So.
Minus the snow.
That was, I have to say, the one positive thing I can say about Indiana is you have very mild, mild winters. And we've already had like a couple of days in the 70s and 80s. So anyway, sorry, I'm taking up your time. My apologies.
That's all right. But you would be surprised how the winters have changed here. We had a great winter. Very little snow. All right.
Moving along.
So if you have a person with disability, we'll be given preference for a unit regardless of what pool they are in. So six of the eight homes will be given preference for households who meet one of the local preference criteria, which is you currently live in Lancaster, you work for the town or the school system in Lancaster, you work for an employer located in the town of Lancaster, or children in your household attend the Lancaster school systems.
I'll be living in Lancaster if I get it, so I will be an employer in Lancaster, right?
Right, but you're not there yet. So
I'm not there yet, no.
Not there yet. But I will say if we don't get six Lancaster residents to apply, then the units revert to open pool. So we don't hold the units for local people. The local preference applies up until the application deadline. And then any other applications we receive from Lancaster or not, they are all considered open pool. So in my experience, I will tell you and the other individual on the meeting, about 70% of the applications we receive for this lottery will be incomplete. So it's going to reduce the number of applicants in the lottery significantly. So
how many do you usually get? I don't know if you can tell me how many you usually get.
Every place is different. You know, I just had a lottery deadline for Lancaster today. It was for just one-bedroom apartment, and we got two applications. I think this one will be more popular because these are essentially single-family homes. You know, you don't have anyone beside you, above you, or below you. So these are really unique in Massachusetts. It doesn't happen often. If they happen, you know, I've had townhome rentals, you know, so you have upstairs, downstairs, but never single family home rentals, essentially cottage rentals. So this is different. So I'll be actually looking forward to see how many we actually do get by the application deadline. But it's kind of a crapshoot.
He's going to be responsible for the application.
Okay. So it's all his fault if it comes in incomplete.
Yeah, it'll be all his fault. A question about providing, you probably go through this, but providing all like the checking accounts and savings accounts, is there a certain date it has to be, like the snapshot of the account?
Last 3 months.
Oh, so you need the last 3 months. So if we get this application to you by, say, April 1st, you will want December... You want January, February, March.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
And well, I'm going to get to details about that. So there is one 3-bedroom home that is a Group 2 handicap accessible unit, and all the other homes that are, well, all the homes are adaptable. So if you need bars in the bathroom or whatever else you may need within reason, the landlord will be able to provide or may be able to provide for you. Now, household type is, there's household type preferences. So in a rental community, we are not able to overhouse people. So for a 2-bedroom unit, it is going to be a husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a room and that there's at least one person per bedroom thereafter. So a husband and wife with no children, we're not going to be able to lease to you. Okay. So a husband and wife and at least one child or a single parent and one child or two sisters or whatever the household makeup may be. But you, the household it has to require the number of bedrooms available. Do you have a question?
No.
So this property is not for single people or one bedroom households unless they have a reasonable accommodation. But the household, again, one occupant per bedroom, husband and wife must share a room, one person per bedroom thereafter.
Ew. Ew. I'm going to share with him?
You do. I know. I know you were hoping something different this go around, but a husband, if you're pregnant, you can count that unborn child as a household member.
No.
But you must submit proof of pregnancy with the application. Okay. So because there's a local pool, 28.2% of the local pool applicants need to be minority. If they are not, then we will move the number of non-local minority applicants from the open pool into the local pool. That will be done via lottery, and that will be done the night of the lottery. So I typically don't know how many minority applicants that are included in the lottery, usually until a day or two before the lottery. So if we meet the 28.2%, minority in the local pool, then the local pool will stand. If we need to move people from the open pool, non-local open pool minority into the local pool, then they are treated exactly as local pool applicants, which means you have two op, or they will have two opportunities for a unit, because you'll be included in both the local and the open pool. Okay. But that will happen the night of the lottery. That it's all done publicly. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. It just depends on the number of applicants. Now, there is, on an annual basis, you need to be recertified for continued eligibility. So you are being determined eligible at 80% of median income. When it comes up for recertification, you can then earn up to 140% of median income. So as your income goes up, you're not forced to move on a regular basis. So for example, the math on that, say you're a three-person household, which right now the income limit is $85,200. Times 140% equals the, so for recertification where you were eligible initially at 85,200, you could now earn up to $119,280. Okay. So the state allows for that. So A, the units don't turn over on an annual basis, and hopefully you're able to stay there for a good long time as your career builds and you earn more money. The income.
How often is that? Is that yearly?
You need to go through the annual recertification annually, yes. You will receive notification from the leasing office probably 3 to 4 months before your lease is up for renewal. And then that information is sent to us, and we determine your eligibility for recertification. If you are over the income limit, at that point you have the option of staying in the affordable unit and paying market rent or moving out. Amanda, what's the market rent for a three-bedroom unit?
$37.50.
So you would go from 24, whatever it was, to $37.50. Okay? Now, there's one other thing that I want to say. It's out of my head. It'll pop back in. This is what it is. The income limits change on an annual basis. So we are waiting for the 2024 income limits to be released. They have not been released yet. So if they are released prior to this application deadline, we will use the new income limits, but the rent will stay the same. So the rent isn't going to change, but if you're slightly over the income limit and the new numbers have come out, it may work to your benefit. But they should be released any day now. We're waiting for them. Not yet.
So what's the market rate for the four person one for a three bedroom?
You said
37.
Oh,
37. Yeah, $37.50 for the three bedroom.
Okay, thank you.
And
I did catch
it. From the initial lease up, those rents will increase annually as well. But just to give you an idea of where they're starting. All right, so regarding the lottery, we have 8 homes, 2 pools, a local pool and the open pool. Everyone who submits an application will be pre-screened for eligibility. If you're eligible to participate in the lottery, you will receive a lottery code, which will be 3 letters, usually a combination of your name. And if you are determined ineligible, you will receive an email stating why you are ineligible and what documents were missing. If you were determined ineligible because you were over income, then you certainly can appeal the decision and we can take another look at your application. You'll have a defined period of time to appeal it. But if you are determined ineligible based on missing documentation, you will not be able to appeal that decision. So we have 5 two-bedrooms. 4 of the two-bedroom units are in the local pool. So that makes 1 in the open pool. For the three-bedroom homes, there are a total of 3, 2 in the local pool and 1 in the open pool. And again, if we are unable to fill the 6 local pool applicants with local pool residents, local residents, then we will fill from the open pool, okay? So that those units are not going to sit empty as long as we have applicants to fill it if they're in the open pool. Okay, so the lottery, everyone who's received a lottery code, we'll have 2 lotteries, 1 for the local pool, 1 for the open pool. We pull the tickets 1 through 50, however many we have, and we won't have 50. 1 through 50, that creates the ranking in the 2-bedroom pool, and the local pool and the open pool. Post lottery, I will then break out each pool, local pool 2-bedroom applicants, local pool 3-bedroom applicants, open pool 2, and open pool 3. And I will send, and that will give us the order in which someone will be able to lease a unit. So post lottery, I will send everyone by email, whether you logged on to the Zoom or not, I will send everyone a copy of the ranking sheet as it was drawn, and attached to that will also be the order in which you will have an opportunity to lease. So that will be the order that we send, the order you have to lease an apartment. And so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for the 1-bedrooms, local and open pool, and then in the for the 3-bedroom, local and open pool. That is the order we will submit the names to the leasing office. Post lottery usually happens the same day. We will send that list directly to the leasing office. Amanda, since you're on the Zoom, do you want post lottery? Do we just send you and you will contact the applicants, or can we give them?
Yeah, I can do that.
Or do they have the option of contacting you directly themselves?
Oh, they could do that too. Whatever works for them. I can reach out or they can call me.
Okay. So post lottery, we will, tell you what Amanda just said, and we will provide you with her contact information. So our goal obviously is to lock the units down as quickly as possible. I did check with Mark this afternoon, the list of the affordable units that are on page 6. The time frames are pretty much the same. Nothing's changed. So some are available immediate occupancy, some in June and July. And then the single family home, that's to be determined because that unit is currently the office. The leasing office. So once the units are pretty much leased, that will be vacated and filled with an affordable applicant for that unit. So when it comes to the lottery, applicants in the local pool will select their unit location first, and those in the open pool will select from what is remaining. Okay. Some of the units, and I have no idea which ones, and that's something you can discuss with Amanda if you have the opportunity to lease. Some units have basements. Some units do not, okay? So there's a mix in the affordable units. The affordable two-bedroom units are all upstairs, downstairs. None of the affordable units are the one-level living. So they are all for the two-bedroom upstairs, downstairs, and for the three-bedrooms, they are upstairs, downstairs as well. And I believe the three-bedroom units has probably the master, perhaps, on the first floor. Is that correct, Amanda? Yeah. So there's no difference in the three-bedroom units other than the single-family home, but the two-bedroom units are all upstairs, downstairs. None of the one-level units are slated as affordable. Okay.
So if then you're pulling the names and we come in third, so it's kind of like a holding pattern, and the two people before us don't pass the background check. Does that mean it jumps down to the third? So the first one doesn't pass background check, then it goes to the second. The second one doesn't pass the credit check, then it goes to the third. Is that what happens?
Well, yes, essentially, but keeping in mind, 2 of those 3-bedroom units are the open pool. And then you're going to be in the local pool. You will be in the open pool.
Right.
Okay, so we're looking at it separately. So if we exhaust the local pool three-bedroom applicants and we fill them from the open pool, what was one unit in the open pool is now three. If we don't have the local pool applicants for a three-bedroom unit, those two units automatically will be filled from the open pool. Does that make sense?
Yep.
I just don't know how it's going to break out until the lottery. I have no idea what the numbers will be for bedroom sizes. I have no.
Very disappointing. Your clairvoyancy skills.
I think she would have won the lottery by now if she had the clairvoyant skills. She'd be celebrating on her private yacht somewhere.
So I don't want to get your hopes up at all, but I do know that Section 8 is not going to work for these units. It's going to be very difficult because in Massachusetts, there is always a fair market rent. The fair market rent is significantly lower than what the actual affordable rents are going to be for the property. So unfortunately, there probably will be some people that apply that have a voucher, and it's just not going to work for them. So at the same time, they will apply. We need to give them time to find out if the housing authority will accept it or not. So that may delay filling the units while that happens, but we'll see how the process goes.
Now, will there be an issue because our address will be Indiana instead of Massachusetts? Will there be any issue with that?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. I'm just looking at employment status, and then it says employer, street address. I mean, I'm my own employer, so I would just put my business name there and then the street address?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't, you're just not going to be in the local pool. You can apply, but you're just not going to be in the local pool. All right. So there is for the two bedroom unit, a $500 month security. You'll have to provide first month's rent and security deposit, which is $500 for the two bedroom and $750 for the three bedroom unit. And that is paid at the time, Amanda, correct me if I'm wrong, they sign the lease. Yes. So that money is needed at the time you sign the lease. So again, you need to be eligible by MCO, or that's me. If you're eligible, you'll be included in the lottery. And then you need to be determined eligible by the leasing office. That's Amanda. If we both determine you're eligible, you will be offered a lease. If Amanda, if you're in the lottery, we've determined that you're eligible. But if you don't pass the leasing office screening, you will not be able to lease a unit. So it's over. If you have a Section 8 voucher, same process, but there's an additional process for them. Their public housing authority needs to approve the property and the rents before they will be offered a unit. So it's just an important step for those in a Section 8. If there are any applicants remaining from the lottery list after all the units are leased, then they would start the waiting list. And the waiting list, it's any applicant remaining in the open pool starts the waiting list, because the local pool, local preference does not apply beyond the initial lease up. All right. So I've already talked about what's going to happen post lottery. I've already talked about the units from most of them are going to be ready immediately following the lottery. The leasing office understands you may need to give a 30-day notice at your current place. That is not a problem. But you will get you a unit and hopefully reserve a unit. And we have no involvement in the leasing office process. So if I'm misstating anything, final word is from Amanda. Okay.
You said everything right so far. Don't worry.
Okay. So we don't get involved in the leasing office screening at all. Okay. So once we turn you over to the leasing office, our job is done until it comes up for recertification in a year. We are always available, obviously, to answer questions at any point in time, but we don't have any direct involvement with the ongoing running of the property.
So I'm a little confused.
Okay.
We've got the leasing office, and what's your title? Pardon?
We're the lottery agent. MCO Housing Services, all we're doing is marketing and distributing, marketing for the eight affordable units. So once all leased up with eligible tenants, our job is done.
Okay.
We get involved in a year down the road or so when you come up for recertification.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right, I think that covers everything. Do you have the application in front of you?
Yes.
Okay, so you know what units are available. There's the site plan that shows you where the units are available. So I'm going to spend the rest of the time going over the application and what needs to be provided. I want to tell you what needs to be provided, why you have to provide it, and how we use it. Okay. So the first.
I do just want to say, I do unfortunately have to jump off. I got little ones I got to put to bed, but I just wanted to know if you guys had any questions before I do that, like from a leasing standpoint or anything about the neighborhood that I could answer.
Oh, I'm originally from Lunenburg, so I know Lancaster well.
Hi. You're from Lunenburg. It's a cute little area. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Born in Leominster, but grew up in Lunenburg, went to Lunenburg High School.
Oh, I was in Lunenburg on Saturday.
Yeah.
Where the hairdresser is. Okay, so we end up putting kiddos to bed, and I'll be in touch after the water is over.
All right, sounds good. I look forward to it.
Oh, wait a minute.
I have a question. Sorry, I was driving, so I didn't want to, like, interrupt with any noise. But my wife and I, we work at in Lancaster for Perkins School in Lancaster.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just wondering, I just wanted you to touch base on how, what benefit that has in the application process.
Well, what is your household size, Steve?
Four.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so yeah, you're looking
my
for...
My wife and two kids.
Okay, and you're looking for a two or a three bedroom?
We haven't really decided yet. Right now, I'm probably a two bedroom, but we might apply for the 3-2.
Okay, what are your children? Two girls, two boys, a boy and a girl?
Two boys.
Okay. So either one will work for you. So you work in Lancaster, so you would be in the local pool. So it absolutely works to your advantage to work in Lancaster. So you actually have two opportunities for a unit because your name is going to be in both the local pool and the open pool.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right.
Yeah. So you're in a good, if you work in Lancaster, so that works, that's going to work to your advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to live there, but we moved like, 2 years ago, but since we worked though, it wouldn't be bad to like be back around because I think our job is like 2 minutes like down the road. So
it is, yeah, very close.
Oh, yeah. That'll be terrific. Well, then you need to pay particular attention to the rest of this meeting because that goes over in detail what you need to provide with your application.
Okay, okay,
so Amanda, right, it was nice to put a face to a name.
Yes, I know.
Yeah,
okay. Have a good night, everybody.
Okay, Amanda.
All right, thank you. You too.
Okay, so on the application, the first page, 18, page 8, is the basic contact information, name, address, cell, usually email. Let us know if you've owned a home, when do you plan on selling it. For you guys who have a home to sell, if it's not sold by the time you apply, then you need to send us a copy of the real estate listing so we can see what it's listed as, the price. If you have a mortgage on the property, you need to send us your last mortgage statement so we can kind of determine a guesstimate on what the equity is going to be from the sale of your home, okay? If your local preference, Steve, you need to check employees of local Lancaster businesses. So you need to make sure you check that off on the application. If you have... we're on page 8, and I know you're driving, so don't look at page 8.
Oh.
We're on page 8 of the application, so you need to make sure you check off employees of local Lancaster business under the local preference.
All right.
Okay? If you have a Section 8 voucher, you want to check yes or no. The number of bedrooms, 2-bedroom or 3-bedroom, you need to check which you prefer. If you require the Group 2 accessible unit, check yes or no. If you require a special accommodation or any of that adaptations, check yes or no. And if it's yes, you need to explain what is needed. And then you need to tell us how many people will be living in the home. And you need to list everybody who will be living in the home, including the person at the top who's filling out the application. Okay? Now, we ask for highlights of your income and assets. So you need to provide your gross monthly income from every source, so for every person who's working. And then you have the household assets. Again, the checking balance, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, IRAs. Go down that list and provide what the current balance is or average. I'm not going to hold you to what you put there. I'm not going to disqualify you if you write down the wrong number, because everything you're putting down for income and assets, you're going to provide the backup documentation for, which is what we are going to take under consideration in determining your eligibility. Okay.
Is just my 2023 tax returns okay for proof of income?
No.
What would I need?
You would need to set up a spreadsheet for the last 12 months. So, I mean, 23 is fine, but we would need a spreadsheet for January, February, and March of your income and assets. And we will determine, project out 12 months based on that, plus what you earned in 2023.
Okay.
So you need to provide your employer. I know you got one works at Perkins, you're self-employed.
Yep.
Provide that information for those of you at Perkins. You need to provide us your base wage. And then if you get bonus commission overtime, approximately what that is per year. This is local preference. There is a local preference in this lottery. So it works to your advantage if you are a minority. You want to, where it says about your household, which you don't have to provide, it's completely optional to complete, but you want to fill that out. It works to your advantage in two ways. One, if you are a minority, it's going to limit the number of non-local minority applicants we're putting in the pool. So it's keeping the pool at wherever it should be. And then if you are a minority, you may have the opportunity to be moved into the local pool. So it's your decision, purely optional. I don't care one way or the other, because I just want to fill the units. But it certainly will work for you if you are a minority. All right. And that, and the minority that we talked about, the certain percentage in the local pool, that only applies for a lottery that does have a local pool. Some lotteries don't. Some lotteries, the units are just distributed based on the open pool. So that's just completely up to you. All right. The next two pages, 11 and 12, is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read, sign, and date that. And then I'm going to go over everything else in a little bit more detail. So on page 13, I put together a page of application tips, and I amend it regularly. Because mainly the tips include all those areas people don't pay attention to and when they complete the application. So I try to give a heads up. This is what we're looking for. This is what you need to do, which could affect your eligibility or not. So these, I have 10 of them right now. And again, they go up and down as needed. So as I already mentioned, I said a higher number, but which it is. More than 50% of the applications we receive for lotteries are incomplete and not included in the lottery. So I am begging you, please take the time to read and submit all the required documentation. It is your responsibility to do so. It does not matter if you are the first application we receive or the last. We do not review applications until after the application deadline. So when we receive your application, we date stamp it and we put it in a file drawer. That is all we do with it. We're not going to look at it until April 19th, okay, which is the day after the application deadline. All right, so you need to, and I'm going to highlight them as we're going through the steps for the required financial documentation, but there are notes on the on that document, and failure to pay attention to those notes can be the difference between a complete or an incomplete application, as well as being eligible or ineligible for a unit. Now, I put this together to be nice because we look through your application with a fine-tooth comb, and we don't make any exceptions if there's a document missing. You're out. So if you pay attention to this and then read through and pay attention to the required financial docs, it's pretty easy to put everything together, a little time consuming maybe, but fairly easy, and it will certainly work to your advantage. All financial documentation, income, and assets are required from all household members aged 18 or older, okay? There is no exception. Don't tell me one of my kids is in college. I don't care. They're over 18. More than likely, they have a checking and or a savings account. We need those documentation. They may have filed taxes if they're a little bit older. We need the tax returns. So you need to make sure you provide that documentation. Now, if you have children in college, we may or may not count their income in determining eligibility. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but if you have a child who is a full-time college student and a dependent on your tax return, then we are only going to count $480 of their income towards the household eligibility income. If you have a full-time student that is not a dependent on your tax return, then their income will count, full income will count towards household eligibility. If you have a part-time student, and if a part-time student is a dependent on your tax return or they are not, it doesn't matter. Their full income will count towards eligibility. So the only time we do not count full eligibility for students, full eligibility, full income for students is if they are a full-time student and a dependent on your tax return. Then we only count $480. Otherwise, we're going to count what their work income towards the whole household eligibility. All right. All asset statements must include your name, your account number, and the institution name. Do not take a photo or a screenshot of your balance that comes up on your cell phone and send it to me. More than likely, we don't accept that, but more than likely, it doesn't include all that information. Doesn't have your name on it. It may not have the account name on it, and it probably doesn't have the account number on it. So we're not going to accept it, all right? So you're much better off going into your statements. For your bank account, you can print out e-statements. For your 401ks, you can print out your current statement. Sometimes they're just quarterly, so you need to provide the last quarterly statement. But do not send a screenshot of anything. It's not going to work.
I'm looking at one of my statements right now for my checking account.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you the full account number. You can't get that. Only list four.
That's all we want.
Okay.
So that's all we need is the last four statements. Last four account numbers. So you can redact all, you know, your Social Security, your bank account statements, your retirement account statements, the account numbers, but you got to leave the last four open, okay? But you can redact everything else, but the last four has to be open. I'll explain why when I start talking about your statements. All right, so you understand any asset statement you must provide, must have your name, account number, and institution name on it. If you provide assets without that information, your application is incomplete. Do not assume you do not need to provide a document. When in question, you can call or email us, and we'll tell you whether you need to provide it or not, or just submit it. And if we don't need it, we'll shred it. I much rather you provide it, something you don't think we may or may not need. Provide it. If we don't need it, we'll shred it.
That was one of my questions. Are you contactable for questions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are here. It's either myself or Jennifer in the office. We are here to answer any questions you have. This meeting is kind of highlighting everything. But as you get to the nitty gritty to put stuff together and you still have questions, please call us. That's what we're here for.
Thanks, Lori.
Okay, so we do count your retirement statements as part of your assets, although there is no asset limit for rental housing. So this may not be as necessary to say, but people argue with me or try to because they say regarding your retirement account, we can see it on the pay stubs, yes. And we can see it on the W-2, yes. What we don't know, and they say, well, you have the amount, and that is a no. All we have by looking at that is what you've paid into that account so far this year. It doesn't give us the cumulative value of the account or the money you have earned on the account's investments, which is why you need to provide the actual last statement of that account, which For 401k, 403b, IRA, Roth IRA, KEO, whatever the account's name may be, you need to provide just the last statement, okay? You can get that from whomever is managing your statements. It could be your HR department, or if your account is managed through Vanguard or Fidelity or Charles Schwab, whatever company it's managed by, you can get a full, you can get a copy of the last statement. And sometimes the statements may be quarterly, which is okay. So if you're getting it together now and it's quarterly, then the only statement you're going to get is through December 2023 and then March 2024. So we understand that.
You know, I have a problem because I retired. I moved all my pension, my 401ks into an IRA, and I didn't do that until January. So I won't get a quarterly statement until, I don't know.
Oh, no, if you moved it in everything into one IRA is monthly.
Is it? Okay, that's fine.
Where did you, what, who's managing your IRA?
Fidelity.
Oh, those statements are monthly. You can go right online and print out a statement.
Fantastic.
Yeah, they're monthly. I know that. So I know that much. Okay. Don't.
No, you are a phenomenal help. You're a phenomenal help. That's wizard information.
Well, I haven't stopped writing it. I have a lot more to share. So if you have a Robinhood, a Robinhood account, a Webull account, an Acorn, cryptocurrency, any kind of online account, whether you have money in it or not, if it's an open account, you need to provide the last statement. People say, well, I only have $50 in my Robinhood account. How do I know that? You may have $50,000 and not $50. So you absolutely need to provide account. If it's open, you need to provide the statement, the last statement for any accounts you have. If you are unable to provide specific information and you've tried to collect it, you can either call me and we can discuss, or you can submit a note with your explanation explaining the circumstances on why that information was not provided. If we can work with you, we will. I can't guarantee we will, but depending on the circumstances, we will see if we can work with you. All right. This is most important. You do not want to annoy me. do not. It is not going to work in your favor. Do not take photos of any documents and then email them to us. No, 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 no. Don't do it. You need to scan any document you're sending to us and submit it in a PDF format. We don't like photos for two reasons. One, 9 times out of 10, they're completely illegible, meaning it's blurry, it's at a crooked angle so we can't see anything, it's too light, it don't do it. And then the other reason is you're taking the photo when you're dropping it into an email, which means I have to sit there and cut and paste that email, add it to another paper before I can print it out. And I have better things to do with my time than to do that. So, but the main reason is they are more than likely not going to be legible. So if we can't read it, we can't use it. So you want to make sure everything you send to us is in a PDF format, scanned and emailed to us or mailed, whatever. You can fax your information. We will accept it. We don't recommend it. We just had a woman who sent over 3 different faxes from Staples. We got 1 of the 3 scans she sent, faxes she sent from Staples. She was really angry, and I said, I'll email you what I got. And I emailed her what we had, and they didn't send the other 2. So that's on you guys, not on us. So just keep that in mind. All right, so now we're getting to the nitty-gritty. 1, if you have a Section 8 voucher, you need to provide a copy of that voucher. If you check yes on a voucher without providing any documentation, we are going to review your application as if you do not have a voucher, which means you need to meet the minimum income requirement for the 2 or 3 bedroom, where if you have a voucher, you do not. You need to provide 1 form of identification for all household members. Birth certificate, driver's license is fine. I'd rather not get your social security cards. Keep those. Passport works. If you require a special accommodation, You need to request that as part of your application and provide the documentation, which usually is going to be a letter from your doctor. All right, so we require your last five consecutive pay stubs from all jobs. We determine your income by projecting it forward 12 months. We will determine your income two ways. One, we will look at your gross pay per pay period. We will average that over the five checks we have. And then we will multiply the average by the number of pay periods in the year. That gives us one amount. The second way we look at your pay, and this is for people who get W-2s, so those who are self-employed is looked at differently, which I will get to. Then we also look at your year-to-date, and we divide the year-to-date by the number of weeks in the year, and then multiply that by 52. We also look at what you earned in 2023. Whichever is greater is going to count as your income, okay? So we don't like, I mean, we look at your pay stubs really carefully because we'll go through it and determine your over income. And then we'll look at it again. Are there any bonuses? Are there commissions? How often are they receiving commissions? How often do they receive bonuses? If you get like one bonus a year, then we're going to take it out and we're going to subtract the bonus amount from your year to date, add the bonus in separately. So we do try to make it work for people. We don't like to determine people over income. It's unfortunate sometimes, but we don't like to do that. So we do look at if you get overtime. Yep.
In terms of Michelle's income,
yeah,
during February and March for her own business, how do we prove that? Because we actually don't know yet because of the cycle in terms of cost of goods sold and cost of goods sold and cost of goods bought. So she buys and sells, and the bit that lags behind is the cost of goods that we buy in.
Well, it's March, so we are going to look at your 2023 taxes for sure.
Yeah.
But you still need to put together a spreadsheet as much as you can of your income January, February, March, and your business expenses January, February, March.
So yeah, because what I buy in January, I pay for in February.
I get it.
Yeah.
I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah, well, this is probably best conversation offline, where if he's got questions of how to provide it for you so that we can carry on. Yeah, that's fine.
So you want to call me tomorrow to discuss, or do you want me to turn the recording off?
No, we'll
give you a ring.
Give you a ring. Maybe not tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. We're getting ready to get the document ready. He'll probably see exactly what you need.
Okay, that'll be fine. So, so you need the last five pay stubs. If you're getting unemployment, we need the DOR verifying the stating the benefits received and the pay history. And the same thing for disability, workers' comp, severance pay, whatever you get on a monthly basis, you would need to provide that documentation as well. Now, from your pay stubs, we also can find if you have a retirement account, it'll list it on the pay stubs. So we'll know to look through your documentation to see if you provided a copy of your retirement account. We can also tell from your pay stubs how many bank, not how many bank statements you have, but where your check is being deposited. Some, it's simple, they just have it deposited in one checking account. Some have it split between five different accounts, okay? So when we start reviewing your asset statements, we're going to go back to that to your paycheck and make sure we have all copies of all those statements. Because if they don't, sometimes from your bank, your pay stub will get the account number, the last four digits of the account number, sometimes not, but it'll say checking, savings, checking, checking, checking. So we match the deposits to what it shows on your pay stubs. So just pay attention to that when you're putting your assets together, because some people, they just have a reserve fund that they put money in and forget they even have the account because they never touch it. So you forget you have it, but we'll see it on your pay stubs, so we won't. Okay, so just take a quick look at your pay stubs to make sure you're covering every bank statement that you have. If you have obtained a new job in the last 12 months, you need to provide a copy of the employment offer. If you were no longer working for a company you worked for in the past year, you must provide a letter from that employer with a copy of your separation date. Okay. And if the five pay stubs, you need five, whether you're paid weekly, bi-weekly, semi-weekly, or monthly. We need five. People will send me three and say, well, it covers 6 weeks, so you should be all set. No, we want five. So if you send three, then your application is considered incomplete. Now, and believe me, we take under consideration, if you just started a new job, obviously you may not have five pay stubs yet. We get that, and we will work with you on that. That's why you need to provide a copy of your offer letter, which should include the start date. So if you just started it a month ago, you may have only one or two pay stubs, and that's okay, because we have that offer letter, all right? So we do work with you as much as we can. Now, if you get monthly benefits, Social Security, annuities, insurance, retirement funds, pension, disability, death benefits, or any type of amount that is a periodic receipt, usually on a monthly basis, we need documentation. So Social Security, we get the benefit letter. We just need the one letter. If you get pension, retirement funds, you need to provide a letter from that company that states what the dollar value is. And some people will say, well, you'll see the deposit in my account, which in your account. That's true, I will. But I'm not going to know if that amount is net or gross. And your eligibility is based on gross income, which is why you need to provide the letter from the company stating what the gross is versus the net, because your income is based on gross. So your Social Security, if you retired, you know, you get, say, $2,000 a month. They deduct $174 for Medicare. That's fine. So the amount we see in your checking account is going to be, I don't know, $1,800, whatever it may be. I'm not going to do the math. But we count the 2,000, not the 1,800 that's deposited into your checking account. That's why we need those letters telling us what the gross amount is. Okay. Child support or alimony, that counts as income. So if you get child support, you need to provide a copy of the divorce papers that lists what the child support is. If you're getting your child support through the DOR, then you need to provide the, I don't know the right name of the report. One is a pay history for the last 12 months. Tells us what you've got every time they paid you and the dollar amount. And then there is my term, probably not the right one, what I call the cover page, which tells us how much you should be receiving and how often you need to receive it, weekly, monthly, biweekly. If they paid it, if it's in arrears, how much is in arrears? So that's what we need for the child support. Or if you just, did not go through the court and are not divorced, but you're getting assistance from your child's other parent, then that individual can send a letter and tell us how much they are paying you on a weekly, biweekly, or however often they are paying it to you. I did include a form in the application. It's on page 18, which is the custody and child support affidavit. If that applies to you, you can fill that form out for each child and then return that with your application or any one of the other things I've stated regarding child support. Alimony usually has been awarded through the court, so you would need to pay to provide a copy of the divorce papers. So we can find out how much the alimony is. So if you are self-employed, you need to provide the last 12 months detailed profit and loss statement, January, February, whatever, income monthly, business expenses monthly. That's going to give us the net income per month. We're going to average that over the 12 months to project out what your projected income is going to be. Remember, if you're working for Uber or Lyft or DoorDash, Instacart, any one of those companies, those are all considered self-employment. So you need to provide that documentation. You also need to provide your last 3 years of federal income tax returns if you are self-employed, along with, if you have it, in business and checking, business checking and business savings account statements. So you need to provide those as well if you have them when you're self-employed. All right, any questions so far?
Yeah, just on that, I stopped working on January the 2nd. Do you need any of my previous? Because I don't earn an income anymore.
Well, you retire, so do you have documentation that stated you retired?
No, I'm not retired per se. I just don't work anymore. And I'm not claiming any
Social
of my
Security
Social Security or anything until I'm 63, I think it is, I'm going to.
Okay, so if you stopped working January 2nd.
I did.
Did you retire? Did you quit? What did you do?
I left work.
Okay, so we need a letter from that company because we're going to see, you're going to have to provide your federal tax returns. We're going to see a W-2 from that company. So yeah. You need to provide a letter from that company stating.
I have it. Yeah, I've got that.
We've got that. All right.
Okay, then that's good. That's all we need. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we need your last, with the exception of you that are self-employed. If you're not self-employed, we only need the 2023 federal income tax return and W-2s. If you have not filed your 2023 taxes yet, then we need your 2022 federal income tax return, all right? If you haven't filed, that's okay. If you filed your 2022, which obviously, okay. I'm sorry, I'm twisting my words all of a sudden. So if you did not file your 2023 yet and you have to provide your 2022 tax returns, if you cannot find a copy of that tax return, you can obtain a copy from the IRS.gov. One of two ways. One, you can go to IRS.gov and you can search and print out form 4506-T, and that form you can complete and submit to the IRS. They will send you a copy of your tax transcript. Or the much faster way is to go to the IRS.gov, create an account with a password and username, whatever else they ask for, and you can print out a copy of that transcript right there. So you don't have to send in a letter to them. You can print it right out and submit it with your application. So you need to do that. If you did not file taxes in 2022, to provide a verification of non-filing of taxes from the IRS. Same way, you can use form 4506-T, fill it out, send it to the IRS, they'll send you back a letter, or you can log in to your own account on the IRS.gov and print out a letter verifying that the IRS did not receive any federal income taxes from you in 2022. Okay, we also need the corresponding W-2. So if you're submitting your 2022 taxes because you've not filed your 2023 yet, we will need your 2022 and your 2023 W-2s and or 1099s. Again, if you can't for 2022, you can print out a wage transcript from the IRS, again, using form 4506-T, or logging into your account, and you can print out a transcript of your wages from 2022. All right, asset statement.
Just a quick question. I don't have W-2 because I'm self-employed, and he's not working anymore. Do I still have to provide his past W-2s?
Yes, yes. Okay, asset statements. So we need to you need to provide the last three checking account statements and savings account statements for every account you have, okay? So we need every page front and back. Do not provide a running transaction list of activity. You must provide the individual statements. If you do not have your statements mailed to you, most people don't these days, they're all online, you can log into your bank and you can download or open up the e-statements. The e-statements are exact copies of what the statement would look like if they were to mail it to you to your home. And that is absolutely fine to submit to us, okay? But you need to provide the full statement, every page front and back. Now, we look at your bank statements, particularly the deposits, with a fine-tooth comb, all right? If you are working and getting a direct deposit from your job, we can tell. It'll say, you know, ABC company payroll, so we know that's your job. If you get Social Security benefits, we can tell. If you've gotten your tax refunds, we can tell. It'll say IRS refund, mass state tax refund, or whatever state you're getting it from. If you are transferring money between your accounts, checking and savings, we can tell because we'll match up the statement numbers. But those, if you have a lot of Venmos, you get income from eBay, Poshmark, PayPal, Cash App, ATM or mobile deposits, Zelle transfers or other transfers between your accounts, we have no way of knowing where that money is coming from. Obviously, Poshmark, eBay, you're probably selling something. So you need to tell us where that money is coming from. And you can write it directly on the bank statement next to that deposit, you know, the Zelle deposit or the ATM and mobile deposits. If this is where people screw up all the time, and I have no sympathy for you, if you don't tell us, we are going to count all that money as a deposit, as income for you. We're going to average, we're going to look at every month's of bank statements and we're going to average it out. And then we're going to multiply by 12. And I guarantee you, there are people who have not been included in the lotteries because they didn't do that. If they had done it, they probably would have been fine. So it's really important for you to pay attention to that and address any deposit that we don't know where it came from. Now, when Venmo started, it used to be this really great, you know, you used to be transferring money between friends to pay back drinks or dinner out, whatever. But people get paid via Venmo now. They get paid through PayPal now. That's how they receive their paychecks. So if we don't know what that money, where that money's coming from, we're counting it as income. And that has really been problematic for far too many applicants. And don't bother arguing with me on the phone because you're going to lose because we have told you, with the notes, listening to this, on the application tip form, to pay attention to the notes because it will absolutely make a difference if you don't, okay? So, but anything we know, we can identify. Obviously, we don't need to make note of it. Anything else we don't know, you need to make note. We know Zelle is transferred between bank accounts. We don't know what bank accounts. We look at your transfers because if we see a transfer from, you know, ABC company, but you didn't provide a bank statement from it. I'm sorry, the bank statements the last 3 months, we're going to think you forgot to, when in fact that's a transfer from your mother or your aunt or something for some reason. It's a one-time thing. If you don't tell us, we're going to count it. Okay. And please remember, all statements must have your name, account number, and institution name on it. That same applies for your savings account. If you have a lot of Venmos or PayPal or Cash App, you may want to print out those accounts, and you can, and just submit them with your application. Better safe than sorry. So if you have a prepaid debit card, this is not your ATM card that is attached to your checking account. This is a separate card on its own. Some people have a Direct Express card because they get their Social Security statement on it. Some people will have a Visa prepaid card or Chime card or all different kinds of cards. Debit card, not a debit card, direct deposit. The balance of those accounts count towards your asset limit. Okay. So for those accounts, we just need your last statement. And you can look at the card and the card is going to tell you where to go for a statement. It'll say, it usually says right on the back of a card. But we just need the last statement for that account. All right. If you have a trust, investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasury, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, any other online accounts, retirement accounts, IRA, Roth, 401k, 403b, and when it comes to your IRA accounts, it's for all current and past jobs. You only need to provide the last statement. We don't need 3 months of statements, just the last statement. I want to backtrack a minute to your tax return on how we use it. We look at your tax return. We'll see interest and dividends, how much you've earned. If you're getting income from a Social Security, an annuity, retirement, it's all going to show it on the tax return. If you are self-employed, it's going to show it on a tax return. If you own a home, it's going to show it on a tax return. So we look at the tax returns very closely. Okay. Doesn't mean so much in rentals as it does for home ownership, because you have to have not owned a home for 3 years to qualify for an affordable home to purchase. But we do look at those pretty carefully as well. And with the W-2s, again, we look at your gross amount, but we can tell if, you know, if it's listed on your W-2, it'll say, you know, a retirement account, or it's the IRS codes. I have a cheat sheet of all their codes. So we can tell if you have a retirement account on your W-2s as well. So you need to provide those retirement accounts. Current account, if you've not rolled it over into an IRA or whatever, we're going to count it less any penalties and taxes. And then for IRA, not IRAs, for retirement accounts, if you are still working for that job, we may or may not count it. Depends how you have access to those funds. If you can withdraw money and have to pay it back, like a loan, we're not going to count it, your retirement account. If you can take what's called an in-service withdrawal, which is withdrawing funds that you do not need to pay back, that those portions of that, those funds, whatever the dollar value is you can withdraw from, any taxes or penalties are withdrawn from that, and the balance of that account will count towards your asset limit. But again, there is no asset limit for inaffordable housing for rentals. There is for homeownership, but not for rentals. All right, we've already talked about students, so I've gone over that. One thing I didn't say, if you have a student, they do need to provide documentation that they are, in fact, a full or part-time student. That should come from the college. Usually it's a college schedule or something that proves that they're a full-time student. We will not take your word for it. If you are pregnant, the unborn child will count as a household member, provided you provide a copy of a letter from your doctor. If you are in the process of a divorce or separation, you need to be at least far enough along in that process that we know what your child support is going to be, alimony if you're going to receive it, distribution of household assets. If that information at minimum has not been determined, it may be too early for you to apply for affordable housing, because, you know, we don't know what your child support will be. If you don't have the income without the child support, we're not going to count it. So it may be too soon to apply for an affordable unit. I think that's it. Any questions?
I think if I have, you're at the end of the telephone, aren't you?
Absolutely. Please call me. My all our contact information is on the very last page of the application. Our phone number, the email, fax, it's all there.
Okay. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Do you know what the actual pet policy is?
My guess is the pet policy will be one or two pets. There will be breed restrictions, and there will be a monthly pet rent, which is on top of per pet, on top of the rent. It's not here, and I apologize for that. Usually the pet rent runs about $60 for a dog and $35 or $40 for a cat.
Okay.
Don't hold me to that. That's generally kind of what I see.
Is that something that Lee's office would answer?
Yes.
And is her number here?
No.
Would you have her?
I don't have it off the top of my head. I have it in the office. So you can call me or email me tomorrow and I'll give it to you.
Okay.
What do you have for a pet?
We've got three small dogs.
What kind of breeds?
They're Sados. They're rescues from Puerto Rico.
They're
mutts.
Okay. So, yeah, I would talk to Amanda. It's their call.
I don't want to fill this all out, and then I want to know ahead of time if it's not possible before I do all this work.
Okay,
and then
I don't blame you.
Before I do all this work.
Yeah, before he does all the work.
Three dogs, maybe one too many.
Yeah, that's it.
But you'll need to talk to Amanda. So email me tomorrow, and I'll be more than happy to give you her phone number.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
She'll get back to you either way.
Okay.
Her email. All right.
So her name was
Steve. You have a question?
Yeah, I have a quick question about the units. Did you say their affordable units had a basement too?
Some do and some don't.
Yeah, because I tried to schedule like a viewing like 2 weeks ago, and when I went, I was told the ones we viewed didn't have a basement. So
that
maybe
be.
Those are the ones that were ready.
Yeah, I don't. Those that have a basement, I think it comes down to the grade of the property. I'm not sure. I'm not a builder.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know which ones have a basement and which do not. I can certainly ask that question tomorrow and hopefully get an answer for you if you want to send me an email.
Okay, yeah, I'll
yeah,
do that.
Send me an email and I'll tell you which ones. But they don't all. And it could just be none of the ones in the basement were available to be seen.
Yeah, yeah, probably. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
That. All right, appreciate it.
No problem.
All right,
okay.
Guys, have a good night.
You too, Steve.
Thanks.
And again, this will be posted online.
That's great.
Okay,
thanks. Appreciate it.
Also, online on which website, please?
Our website, mcohousingservices.com.
Okay, all right, got it.
Under the listing for the cottage rentals in Lancaster.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, any other questions?
No, thank you, Maureen. Greatly appreciate your patience.
You're very welcome. So call and I'll give you Amanda's information.
Will do. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.